Hello and welcome. This is World Peace Diet Sunday, Phone Bridge Study Group. My name is Lily Macy and I facilitate this study. The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. The book, the music that we've been listening to is from a CD called Animal Songs by Dr. Will Tuttle. Will Tuttle is a professor, composer, pianist, visionary, and author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. And I just want you to know that when my husband and I read the book, we said it's the most important book of this of the 21st century, or any century for that matter. And I've been living by that book now for 10 years. I started this study group over 3 years ago. This is my fourth year. I'm taking a break after this particular session, this closing session, and I will be back on April 23rd to continue this study of the World Peace Diet. If there's anyone new on the line, I read, I make commentary, and then I also open it up for discussion. It's a lively hour. It's an hour well spent, and it's live, and it's interactive, and it's just wonderful. I love doing this. It's the best I can do for what's going on here on this beautiful and, as Dr. Will Tuttle says, misunderstood planet. So we're not going to continue with the book today because many of you know that Dr. Tuttle is my honored guest here today. Just returned from yet another one of his incredible tours of China, Vietnam, Taiwan, Singapore. He had just made an 11-month tour across the whole United States. When he finished his tour in the Orient, he went to Hawaii and spent a week there teaching and discussing. I mean, he is a powerhouse of energy. Been a vegan for nearly 40 years, I think, and he certainly derived a lot of energy from this wonderful, plant-based, beautiful way of eating. So I don't want to take up any more time. We're already 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Before we start, I always like to start with the prayer from Dr. Will Tuttle's Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And I give thanks that this is so, and so it is. That's what Dr. Tuttle always says, and it's creating a positive energy field on this planet that needs so much compassion today. So without any more ado, are you there, Will?
I'm here. I think I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Wonderful. Right. Wonderful to have you with us.
Great.
Wonderful
yeah,
to hear your voice. I'm so glad
thanks
you're back from all that touring. I always get worried. So I'm going to turn it over to you unless there's something you want to say to me.
No, that's great. I mean, certainly feel free if there's anything else that needs to be said, but otherwise I'm happy to go ahead and jump in. We were talking about the possibility, and I heard you just mentioning it, of discussing some of the salient points and interesting experiences that happened for us in our recent tour to Asia. And so I thought I would go ahead and do that, and then perhaps afterwards happy to answer any questions about that too. So yeah, thanks. So I want to just thank everyone.
I just want to tell you, you're coming in just a little bit crackly. Are you on
really?
A cell phone?
All right. Oh yeah. But let me try something. Let's see. So that's.
Because you've always, every time you've ever been on here before, it's been really clear, but it's a little crackly.
Is it a little crackly? Okay. All right.
I'm hearing it very clearly.
Okay. Maybe it's my phone.
Is this
Are you there, Will?
Is this any better? like this?
I think so. It might be, but someone else said they could hear you. I think that was Andrea. I think she said she could hear you. So if anybody else is having trouble hearing, Will, let us know. Otherwise, carry on. You're going to tell us about your incredible tour. So go ahead.
Right. Okay. Just have to hear. Yeah. Okay. So we left. Actually, Madeline went to Switzerland. Her mother is 97 years old and just needed a few weeks of care. She just moved into a nursing home. She's a vegan, which is great. And I think my sister's daughter is going to be giving birth to a little baby, and I think they found out somehow that it's going to be a girl, which is kind of cool. We're going to be having four generations of vegan women all alive at once. My mother, my sister, my sister's daughter, and the little baby will all be vegan. So that's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And so glad that they've all gone vegan. It makes it much easier. But so she went to Switzerland. I flew to Beijing, and this was in November, and we were gone for a couple of months until the end of December. And I'd like to just say some of the things that I learned during the time in China about the vegan movement there, because I think it's very interesting. And as everybody knows probably, Madeline and I have been doing quite a bit of touring and lecturing and sharing ideas about the benefits of moving to a plant-based way of living and the devastating effects really of animal agriculture, not only in the United States and Canada and here, but quite a lot in other countries, in the Middle East and Africa and Eastern and Western Europe and in Asia also, some in Australia, New Zealand. And this was the very first time going to China. So it was, all in all, it was far beyond my expectations in terms of the openness to the message and the enthusiasm and the sophistication, I would say, also of the Chinese people. And it began dawning on me something I already knew, really, but it was really, you know, made more sense when I was there and was actually interacting with everyone, that China is probably arguably the very first place, place where veganism was lived as veganism for hundreds of years. I think really, you know, when we trace vegetarianism, say, you know, back, you know, to Pythagoras, you know, or to pretty much everything leads back to India. And India is still today the country with more vegetarians than any country in the world, and by far. And however, they always did dairy, right? I mean, there's always this dairy thing. And so the Buddhist, you know, the Buddhism was really a movement to reform the traditions that were existing at the time, 2,500 years ago in India, and there was a lot of animal sacrifice that was part of the religion at the time the Brahmins were doing, and one of the main things the Buddha did was get rid of that for him, and it really was very successful. And and so vegetarianism became the norm, really, in India, largely because of the Buddhist influence and the Jain influence also. And in the early 5th century, Bodhidharma went to China and brought the Buddhist teaching, the Dharma teachings, to China. And the Chinese people kind of combined it somewhat with the existing Taoist teachings and their other traditional teachings. And we had the arising of a Buddhism in China, and the whole flowering of thousands and thousands of temples and monasteries, that were vegetarian, but they had never done dairy in China. I mean, that was just not part of their consciousness at all. They never had cows for milk. So we would call it veganism. There was no meat, dairy products, or eggs. And this went on, you know, this has been going on in China actually since the 5th century, you know, for 1,500 years. People in the monasteries there, that's how they live. So, so this is really the birthplace of veganism on planet Earth, as far as I can see. And when we talk about, like today, I just read an article in one of these big investment. It was extracted from, I think, Fortune magazine or one of those, about the one of the hottest new growth industries is meat. You know, vegan meat. Impossible Foods and some other ones are really making big waves and getting a lot of investment interest and so forth. And it's so interesting because this all goes back to, again, to China. These monasteries, when they, as they went along, of course, the monks and nuns in the monasteries were eating totally plant-based foods. They were eating rice and vegetables, primarily tofu also, and fruits. But they had patrons, wealthy patrons, that would support them financially. And so throughout the Tang, Song, and Ming dynasties, when the patrons would come, which they did at the special, you know, feast days and festival days that they would hold to and give teachings, the temple cooks started to invent meats, basically, that were vegan pork and vegan fish and vegan chicken, and so that their patrons, who were far from being vegetarian, a lot of them, they were very wealthy, but they wanted to have something a little more to their what they were used to, and so they would give them these vegan alternatives. And this was really, in a sense, the start of this whole cuisine, which is still going strong today, to help people who are not vegan to realize that there's still things that you can sort of simulate that if you'd like to. But of course, the monks and nuns weren't that interested in it themselves. But it was something that was begun back then. And so when I arrived in China and started speaking at various venues, when I started speaking at venues. I realized that one of the most popular venues that I would speak at were these traditional Chinese societies would have these halls. They were beautiful. They would have, you know, a big auditorium. They'd have, you know, beautiful calligraphies on the walls and so forth. And they just loved the fact that I was there promoting vegan living. They don't really have a word for vegan. So that was another thing I had to kind of a little bit deal with. They have a word for vegetarian, su, I think it's suma, but vegetarian means vegetarian, and it's seen more as something for monks and nuns, and it does not, it actually nowadays, since there's so much dairy in China, it doesn't exclude dairy. So they have a word, strict vegetarian is what they use. But actually, they have another word, pure vegetarian. But pure vegetarian is a vegetarian who doesn't eat garlic and onions. And because a lot of people think that those foods are overly stimulating and really not that good for you. So that's pure vegetarian is what actually monks and nuns are typically, they don't eat those foods. So the word for veganism in Chinese is strict vegetarian, but the vegans don't like that because the whole idea is we're not strict. We're happy, joyful people that don't eat animal foods, right? So we're not strict in that sense. So then it was very interesting because the fellow who was coordinating my tour, his name is Dr. Yu, and he's a really wonderful, very energetic man, and he has a PhD actually in physics, but he's gone through a lot of training in China and also in the United States. He's gone through Qigong and Camels and a lot of other programs. So he's knowledgeable about vegan nutrition, and he has his own vegan restaurant in Beijing. And we were talking about this, and he has started together really with me something called, that he called in Chinese, the Chinese words are the World Peace Diet Project. And World Peace Diet seems to be a better word than veganism in their language. They don't like to borrow words from other languages. They don't like to just borrow the word vegan, and the word, they don't really have another word for it. And so when people say, you know, what kind, how do you eat? He says, oh, I eat a World Peace Diet, you know. And it's just sort of a generic term, and vegan living would be, World Peace Living, World Peace Diet, World Peace Living. But it's something that everyone sort of agrees on. And so when I was there, you know, I was just enormously well received. As soon as I landed in Beijing, there were I was met at the airport by a crowd of people with these big, long, huge red banners welcoming me to China, and flower arrangements were gigantic, and big bowls of persimmons and fruits, and whisked away to this very beautiful, fancy hotel, and and basically, just whatever I, they wanted me to work, to give lectures and things, but during the day, they were really excited to take me around, so we went a little bit of sightseeing and stuff. But most of the time, quite honestly, I was giving lectures or interviews or something. But I did get a chance to go to the Great Wall and the Forbidden Palace and a few things. And but anyway, so the point I guess I want to make here is that as I went through the tour to many cities, and there was 12 cities actually in just 14 days, so it was really busy. And we spent the first couple of days in Beijing, and then to go down to Canton, which is Guangzhou. And so I learned very quickly that these events are really they're long and they're well attended, and they have a big impact. They had media there. The media, I'm sure I reached literally millions of people, because they had radio and television people. They also had internet. I talked to some of these internet groups, and she said, oh, yeah, we have 16 million. We have 8 million. They have very lot. I mean, they have 1.3 billion people, and so we only have 0.3 billion, here in the States, and comparatively. I mean, they have so many people. So I realized that I was, reaching a lot of people. And there was always at least 300 or 400 people at the event, sometimes 500 or 600. And so there was always a piano. He always had a piano brought in. I mean, they were usually just brought in just for that event. They were just wrapped in plastic. They were still these nice grand pianos. And so it was very busy, and I would do events in the afternoon very often, sometimes in both afternoon and evening. And I always had an interpreter. We had a little problem with interpreters the first couple of times because they weren't, it's difficult. You have to have an interpreter who's a vegan, really ideally, and who has a feeling for it. And the first two lectures didn't go over all that well, because the interpreters really weren't that qualified. And that was in Beijing. It was okay, but it was like, I know Dr. Yu was like pulling his hair off, thinking, what am I going to do? Every single city, I got to have some deal with some sloppy interpreter. Difficult. It's just difficult to get good interpreters. And it was so wonderful. It was like this angel came when we arrived in Guangzhou, and after all the events in Beijing, and this woman met us at the station, at the airport, along with a whole other bunch of other people, and she spoke really good English, and she had lived in the United States for quite a few years. Anyway, her name was Jade, and so she went with us from then on to every single destination, every single lecture. She was there. She flew with us, stayed in the hotels, and mm-hmm. so forth, and she was absolutely not only really an amazingly wonderful translator who would just stand up on the stage next to me and just go right along, but also Dr. Yu was handling everything, and he was completely overworked. And so I don't know what would have happened if she hadn't come with us, because she really kept the thing together, actually. So it was great. I mean, she was really a godsend for sure. And but anyway, so the things I really learned going to these various cities, number one was that there's a very vibrant vegan movement there. You know, when we get to Guangzhou, for example, you know, in Beijing we saw, I saw there was quite a few vegan restaurants, and I met people, vegan filmmakers. You would usually, in all the, pretty much most of the cities, I would give a lecture for maybe an hour and a half with some piano music and so forth in there. Then Dr. Yu would usually give a shorter lecture on the nutritional aspects. And then usually, or he would do that before me sometimes, and then usually we would have a panel after that. You know, so it was this, very often it was a long, like, four-hour, you know, thing. And they would have a, we'd have a panel, and people would come up on the stage and with Dr. Yu and myself, and then there would be a local, you know, vegan entrepreneurs who had restaurants or had or were filmmakers or had a vegan, you know, group of some kind or were making products and selling them or whatever it was. All kinds of interesting people. So I get to meet all these people and talk to them, and then, like, I remember we went in Guangzhou, the second city, we went to this I just really was unprepared for such a, it was a great surprise, you know, to see that. I thought it was just some small operation. She said, well, we you know, we sell vegan products on the internet, you know. I was picturing a few people, like a couple and a couple of helpers. And we, you know, we were in this gigantic city. I mean, Guangzhou is one of the largest cities in the world. It's enormous. And we went into one of these gigantic skyscrapers and up, you know, the 30th floor, and they had the entire floor. They must have had at least 60 or 70 employees, and they were all, I think, under 30, all these young people. And they were just going, like, you know, wild. I mean, it was just going great. Their business is booming. They're selling all these vegan products through the internet and, you know, hooking up, you know, manufacturers and consumers and so forth. And that was kind of the pattern. I mean, I saw that there's really a consciousness there, and this is kind of this coming together in many ways of three forces that I think really makes the Chinese country as a country and as a culture very positive for the vegan message. One is, like I already said, the tradition, you know, that veganism is in the bones and blood of the Chinese culture and the people, I think. I mean, really, it's something that the monks and nuns have done for, you know, 1,500 years. It's something that's sort of in the popular imagination as something that's good. You know, it's got a positive connotation, essentially. And so there is this, and plus there's this feel, there's this automatic connection of veganism with spirituality, which is missing in the West. And people who are vegan there, it was so easy for me to talk to them. The World Peace Diet approach to veganism is not a merely sort of materialist, rationalistic approach to just trying to get nutrients and so forth. It's, the whole idea is to look more deeply and understand the cultural and anthropological effects, also the psychological effects, and also the ethical and spiritual dimension of us as human beings, and to see that, you know, that our human life is an opportunity for us to awaken and to contribute to the healing of our world in a way that is unique to us, each one of us, and that it's part, that spiritual practices are part of this, that meditation helps us to connect with our intuition, to get beyond the programming of our society, that if we don't practice some kind of inner discipline, then very often we find it very difficult to get beyond the indoctrination that we've endured and the emotions that cause us to be critical and upset and angry. And so the vegan movement, I think, in the West is plagued with this delusion that veganism has nothing to do with spirituality somehow. And in China, it was just so refreshing because, you know, as soon as I started talking anything in that way, they were just right there, you know, and they're different. You know, they would applaud all the time while I'm speaking. It pretty much never happens in the West, but I'm going along giving a talk and all of a sudden I have to stop because everybody's clapping, you know. And they were very expressive of their feelings in a positive way. And
so, Will, were these people all, have they read this in Chinese? Has it been translated into Chinese?
The World Peace Diet has been translated into both forms of Chinese. it was first actually translated into simplified Chinese, which is what is used on the mainland, and then into traditional Chinese, which is what is used in Taiwan and to some degree Hong Kong. But then it came out actually in Taiwan earlier, and it was stuck in a bureaucratic limbo in the mainland China for about 4 years, because everything that's published has to be approved by the government, and they read every single word. And so it just took a while, and so it only came out, I think, in maybe in May. I guess it came out in May. And so, but people, it had started getting around. So we were selling so many books. I mean, Dr. That was part of what Dr. Yu had to do. The publisher didn't think we were going to sell so many books. And Dr. Yu said, we're going to sell a lot of books, you know, do a big print run. And she didn't want to. And he said, you've got to do it. And he was right. I mean, it was amazing. I was, you know,
so these
for an
people
hour.
Were new. These people were new vegans then. They had never heard you before. And based on the talk, that's why the books were sold.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, they would. I know it was quite impressive to see how. I was always amazed. You know, I'd give a talk, and it would be this absolute stampede of people. It seemed like every single person would, you know, want me to sign a book. You know, and when we had a lot of people, I'd be signing. I mean, in the United States, and you know, usually I sign maybe 20 or 30 books. I was always signing at least 100 or 200. You know, I'd be there signing. You know. And it was great because they were even 300 books in one time, and to do it, and it was a joy to do it with these people. That was very interesting because that was another thing I was going to just highlight briefly. Not only the sense I had that they understand the spiritual sensitivity, you know, sensitive to that spiritual dimension, but also there's this underlying sense of respect that I enjoyed, you know, in the way things are done, the way people interact with each other, it seemed like, at least the way they interacted with me, but it seemed like it's really kind of more the way they do things together. For example, when you give something to someone in China, you would never give it with one hand or receive it with one hand. And it took me a while to get used to it, but once I did, it's such a beautiful thing. You know, like if you're going to give someone your business card, here we just, you know, hand them the business card, the person takes it. You know, it's always one-handed. There, it's always two hands. You give it with this little business card, you reach out both hands, and the other person reaches out both hands, and you take it, and then you nod and bow, you know. And there's always this sense of respect with every transaction or every gift or every... anytime, so when people give me the book to sign, you know, they always give it with both hands. I'd receive it with both hands. I would sign it. I would give it back to them with both hands and bow, and you know, and there was always this big smile and thank you. And it was there was this sort of ritual of respect that are sort of built in automatically into the way they do things. And to me, it's just it kind of reinforces the vegan teachings of respect for all life. You know, that's the basic idea. And but anyway, I was saying that there's these three attributes that, of their culture that I think sort of are promoting veganism very powerfully. One is the tradition, like I said, just the fact that veganism has been there all along. And number two is science. You know, they're very into science, and science is now more and more really helping us to understand the main points, that we don't need to eat animal foods to be healthy, that nutritionally plants, you know, give us everything we need, and that environmentally it's devastating. And so from the point of view of science, a lot of young people really like that aspect. And then the third aspect is the government, because the government of China, about, I think, 3 or 4 months before I got there, had made an official policy mandate that it's important, it's essential, it's a goal to reduce meat consumption in China by 50%, you know, like cut it in half. And so the government naturally, I don't know if they're aware of what I was doing, but if they were, it would be right along in harmony with what the government's trying to do. And the people are very supportive, really, of their government. So they think it's, you know, if the government wants to do that, then, you know, we should do it. And it was very interesting. It was very humorous in a way. There was always a big laugh. because I would sometimes I would mention the fact that what I'm saying here, folks, is something also that your government is supporting and mentioned about the, you know, the mandate to reduce meat eating. And then I would say, sometimes I would say, gosh, you know, living in the United States, I wish that the government of the United States was as wise as the government of China. And everybody would laugh and clap and cheer. It was a funny thing. And I tried, because I really wanted to try to plant, without, not overtly, but just, you know, the basic idea that to honor and respect their own traditions. You know, most countries we've gone to, they want to be like Americans. Everybody wants to be like Americans. They want to eat the way we eat. They want to watch our movies. They want to, you know, they believe our media. They believe everything. They believe the United States is, you know, everything is great here and the way everything should be. And, you know, I want to convey that that's not a good idea in a lot of cases, but especially around food. You don't want to be eating, because McDonald's and Burger King, Kentucky Fried Chicken, they're everywhere. Burger King, not so much, but Wendy's, they're all over the place in China. It's huge. And so a lot of young people think that that's hip and cool to be eating McDonald's. And fortunately, there's another whole move that it's hip and cool to be a vegan. And that's what we saw. That's kind of what we were seeing happening. This tremendous networking. That was the other thing I really noticed in China that I just have never seen anywhere else to the degree, I don't think, was the cooperativeness of these people with each other. You know, the events were so smoothly run, and the way the people just worked together, it was quite amazing how they just did everything together. It was kind of this group mind. And when I would get, you know, I'd finish a talk, very often they would have, like, the whole audience would come up on the stage and take a big group picture. You know, they loved doing that kind of stuff, and having groups photographs and talking about, you know, connecting. They have this thing called what's it called? It's called WeChat. They don't have Facebook over there, and so they have WeChat. And they would actually, at the very beginning, sometimes the guy would say, okay, everybody, let's all go on WeChat together. Everybody would go on WeChat. The entire auditorium, 400 or 500 people, they'd all go on, and they have a way, I guess, of just connecting everybody together right then, you know, so they're all friends. And so they can share pictures and share things together. And
you had no less than 300 people at each event, and you say now it's, how many events was it? It was 12 days.
There was a good 20 events, I would say. You know, and you know, it depends.
And no less than 300 people came, and usually more, right?
It was usually, I would say, around 300 to 400 people were most of them. Mm-hmm. There was one in Taiwan, which was later, which was 700. That was a bigger one. But most of the events in Taiwan were well attended also. But yeah, in China, they were typically about 300 to 400 people. Every single time, I was sometimes amazed. We would be, you know, taking the train or the taxi, whatever it was, to get there and go in, and all of a sudden open the door and just huge crowd of people. It was great every time. You know, it never failed. I mean, it was always a big crowd, which was very impressive.
You got spoiled because, you know, you can come here, Will, and you'll have 16 people, you know. It's just unbelievable.
I know. It was true. There was always big crowds, and they were so respectful. They always gave me these huge bouquets of flowers on the stage, and you know, it was like a whole different way, in a way, of doing things. But not to say that, you know, our way is great. I'm not comparing it, really. I'm just saying it was just interesting to see the cooperativeness, the respectfulness, and the deep roots of veganism. This is what I saw over and over again. And also the vigorous nature of the movement there, reflected in the restaurants and in the businesses we visited. I mean, we went to another, I'll just go quickly through the lecture. We went to Beijing for a few days. We went to Guangzhou, did a bunch of events there, media interviews and events. And then we went, one was at a really interesting, was at a place at an art college, and this world famous, this guy that ran this thing, he's a famous calligrapher. He has books, you know, he's of his own calligraphies. He gave me one of his books, but he created a calligraphy just for me based on the World Peace Diet. And they had just a beautiful, beautiful space that they put on this lecture. And so veganism is very much connected with the arts and with meditation. I gave lectures, like the next place was in Kunming. It was a Buddhist temple, and it was a huge crowd. I was amazed. I played the piano. They had people doing dancing along with the music, and there was all kinds of arts. I guess that's the point I'm making. But a lot of arts connected with the vegan movement there, and also in Chengdu, we gave some lectures there. We did every single day. We flew to another city after Guangzhou. So we flew to Chengdu, Kunming, and then to Xi'an, which is kind of a famous city. Lots of things to see there, but I didn't have too much time. But it was a beautiful event. And then to Taiyuan, which is a university city, spoke at the university. Shenzhen, which is a gigantic city that just sort of grew up quickly outside of Hong Kong. We flew there, and it was a beautiful an area of Shenzhen that's kind of hippies, Chinese hippies. And we had a beautiful breakfast lecture there, and then went to over to Hong Kong, which you have to go through immigration and all this stuff. And they actually created in Hong Kong, the Vegetarian or Vegan Society of Hong Kong, in conjunction with my lecture, a whole veg fest. So they had booths and vendors and other speakers and everything. So that was really a big event. They did one of those also in Guangzhou too. And I spoke at a Loving Hut there later in the evening. Then we went to Shanghai, gave some lectures. They had this whole movement in China called China Fitness. And China Fitness is a movement that's vegan. PCRM, Neil Barnard, they have people over there working with China Fitness. And I was amazed. That was in a hotel, and I was a keynote presenter. And again, this was a very large, this was probably close, yeah, this was a good 400 people at least were there for that. And it went really well. And then right after that, we went to another one of these vegan businesses. A woman who has a vegan baked goods factory. She took us to this factory, and we toured it, put on, hair nets and white, things. But it was so interesting. And all these workers were there. And I asked her, I said, why are all these workers here? It's a Sunday, And she said, oh, they all came in because you're here. And I was, it was kind of amazing to me that these workers would just come in, and I don't think they're even being paid. They just wanted to meet me. But there's this sense, again, of respect and dedication to the cause. I really felt it, in everybody. It was like they're really very passionate about what they're doing. And so it was beautiful, and that was in Shanghai. And then we went up to Hangzhou. Again, that was a university city. I spoke at the university. And then we went to Haining, and this was really interesting. This was right at the end, kind of at the end. But in Haining, after the lecture, we went to a vegan restaurant. I was really late, and we had to get up at like 4 in the morning, for the next flight. And I really did thought to myself, I really don't want to go there. We're not going to be back till midnight. But we went anyway, and it was wonderful. I'm so glad I did, because this restaurant was just a beautiful. They had like been able to buy a whole kind of an area in the city where they had a large park, a garden. And they had the vegan restaurant. They had like some other rooms connected with it, and the whole thing came out of some people who didn't have much money, but they decided to sell shares. And for, I think, the equivalent of around $3,000, you could buy one share, and no one was allowed to buy more than one share. And they now have gotten 130 people to buy shares. And so they, with that much money, they were able to just create this restaurant. And it's a community restaurant. It's like this community vegan restaurant. It's so different from the kind of models we have typically of doing something. And they had, if you ate all of your food and didn't throw any food away, you know, then they would take some money off your meal, you get a refund or something. They were encouraging people not to waste food, which I think is so cool. And it was just to hear this guy tell about how they were able to offer the meals for very inexpensively, but they still, you know, had plenty of money to meet all their expenses and plus extra to feed hungry people if there were some. And so it was just beautiful. Like, there was quite a few of these kinds of things that I ran into, you know, in China. This sort of community-oriented way of living. Also, we went to Xiamen, which is a beautiful city right on the coast. And one fellow came up there from far away. He had to travel for a few days to get there. And his name was Master Ma. And I was so impressed with this man because he looked very impressive. He's a, you know, somewhat elderly, but very powerfully built, strong guy. He had a long, just a kind of one of those little white-haired beard from his chin, and wore all white clothes like a Taoist, wandering Taoist priest, and had been living on the road for 5 years. And what he does, he carries a pack that weighs about 100 pounds, and his vow is to go to every city in China. I mean, this is a lot of cities in China, to every city in China, and bring the vegan message. And so in his pack are all these vegan pamphlets that he himself has composed and printed, and he hands them out to people, and he goes and speaks at churches and at cultural centers promoting veganism. And it's going to take him 7 years to go to every city in China, and he's doing this on his own, just traveling around hitchhiking, which is not done very much in China. And he's only got 2 more years, and he'll be finished with that, with going to every city in China, and then his vow is to do every city in India, which I couldn't believe. But he was a beautiful person. Just to be with this guy, he was so humble and so...
He was Chinese deeply. Then. He was Chinese.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Chinese guy, yeah. And just completely devoted to spreading the vegan message, giving his life to it completely, you know, and traveling, and that's it, you know. And I just met inspiring people everywhere. You know, after my talks, I met people who I could see were deeply spiritually mature and really avid vegans too. And it was just so refreshing and inspiring to be with these people and to be part of the same thing, and to just to feel that the tremendous commitment that they have, you know, to veganism over there in that society, at least, you know, a good segment of the people do. So that's more or less the China. I flew from there to Taiwan, and Madeline flew from Basel, Switzerland to Taiwan, and we met. She arrived at the airport and waited till I got there in Taipei, and it was great, you know, to meet each other after being apart for 3 weeks. And it was 2 weeks. Yeah, we were there for 2 weeks. And then we spent 1 week in Taiwan. And Taiwan, I have to say, is the number one most vegan-friendly country in the world. It's a much smaller country. It's, you know, not very big, but there's over 1,000 vegetarian restaurants and just a lot of huge vegan movement. It's a huge vegan movement. I mean, it's gigantic. And we were sponsored by the Clean Life Foundation, which is one of many foundations and spiritual groups that is promoting veganism in Taiwan. We also went the second day to the Tzu Chi Foundation. They have something like 10 million members, and they promote veganism. And worldwide, and there's another movement even bigger than they are, the Fo Guang movement. But then they're all Buddhist. They're Buddhist-oriented, and they're vegan-based, and they have so many followers. And they're based on not only on meditation, but on trying to make a better world for everybody. And Tzu Chi especially is really world famous for going everywhere right after floods and hurricanes and feeding hungry people and helping people. And they just go all over the world, in Africa, everywhere to do that. And in fact, even here, I remember after the fires and there were people that were hungry here in Lake County, where we live in Northern California. It was Sue Chi that came here and set up a vegan food for everybody in the county who was hungry. You know, so and I was actually really honored because we went, and the woman who's the founder of Sue Chi, she's Heng Yen, her name is. She's a meditation master, Bhikshuni Heng Yen. She is really hard to ever see, but we were given a meeting with her, and I was able to present into her hands a copy of the World Peace Diet in Chinese, and she and we had a conversation, and she said it was really wonderful, you know, that we're spreading the vegan message and that they're doing the same thing, and you know, and so that was a beautiful, you know, opportunity to have to be with her and just go to this ceremony after. We went for a little while. I mean, this hall, this gigantic, there must have been at least 3,000 people in there doing this whole ceremony that they were doing. But anyway, so that was Taiwan. We gave a very large lecture.
Will, let me ask you this. You were on Chinese television, you said, a few times, right?
Yeah.
They invited you. Let me ask you, did they do an interview, like, you know, the type that maybe Michael Toms did, or was it a short, brief? How did that go for you? How many times were you were allowed to speak on Chinese television for the whole country, right?
Well, actually, in the mainland China, I can't say that I had such big opportunities. I did do interviews in mainland China for local television stations and local radio stations and internet, whatever they're called, you know, internet groups that were huge. I mean, you know, many millions of people. And I did, but they weren't, typically they weren't long. I mean, some of them were pretty long, like maybe 20 minutes or something. Some of them were more like only 5 minutes or, you know, just a few questions and they say thank you. But there were some longer ones. I did a few longer ones in China, but I think, the really big, stations, they covered, and we'd answer a few questions afterwards, but it was usually only a couple of minutes. But then when I was in Taiwan, the Clean Life Foundation set up two major press conferences, and they were both really elaborate, like nothing we do. I mean, like things I'm not used to at all. Like the first one, they had all these media there. I mean, they all came. They were standing around. I mean, they had set up all their video. They had all their video cameras, and they were like a whole army of media. And then they did a whole thing, you know, like they had these women come out and do a special dance for the healing of the earth. They had someone create the most magnificent, gigantic turkey out of fruits and vegetables. I mean, huge, really a work of art. And that was for Thanksgiving, to show we should have a vegan Thanksgiving. And then they had me give a speech, although they didn't want me to speak too long. I spoke probably 10 minutes, I guess, and they recorded all that. And then they had one other person give a speech, and then they had some more, and then they had me play the piano. And then afterwards, the individual stations would, each one of them came up to me and asked me a few questions that they could have, you know, for their individual station. So that we did that once in Taichung, and then in Taipei, they did another one, and this was really interesting. It was kind of similar. They had an introduction. This time they had one of the most well-known fashion designers in Taiwan, a famous guy, create these costumes. And they had these trained models, highly trained models wearing them, and they were completely, you know, just fruits and vegetables. They were wearing fruits and vegetables. They had these gigantic, you know, hats on that were, you know, towering with fruits and vegetables, and they had different themes. Some were fruits, some were vegetables, some were autumn vegetables, some were spring vegetables, and they were wearing clothes that had the theme. It was very elaborate. I mean, they were high heels and fancy, and so they were all flashing, you know, pictures and all of this. It was like a whole fashion show. And then they had me give a talk. And then they had this calligrapher do a special display. He was a vegan calligrapher, and then they had me play the piano, and they had another guy give a short talk, and then they did interviews again. So it was an immediate event, that, and I saw it later on their television. But I, you know, I was all in Taiwanese, so Chinese, I couldn't understand what they were saying, but I saw them, you know, I saw, this is something everybody was watching on TV, you know, the whole thing. It was a big extravaganza showing, in both cases, the idea was to show how creative, how fun, how delicious vegan eating can be, and talk about the environmental effects and the health effects and so forth. So I know in Taiwan we reached a lot of people. I think this was national TV in Taiwan, but Taiwan is, of course, a lot smaller than mainland China.
Was the compassionate part of veganism mentioned at all in any of the Asiatic places, you know, other than the effects on the planet, the effects on health, but was the compassionate component there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're very, very sensitive to that. I mean, I talk about it all the time. And I think it was, you know, I could tell people are very touched about that. And that was, a lot of people said that's the reason, you know, it's for the animals. It's, you know, that's the reason. And I also talked about it in the press conferences, too, just that, you know, the abuse of animals is unnecessary and it's devastating. So, yeah, that's always apart. I know what you mean. Sometimes they don't want to talk about that, but no, they're very, 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 very sensitive to that. Was the feeling I had in mainland China, also in Taiwan. So Taiwan, yeah, the Taiwan, they just really took great care of us. We did many different, like every day we were busy somewhere doing a lecture. We did one lecture for a bunch of young people, which was fascinating. They had us all up on the stage, and they had all these young people who are pioneers in spreading the vegan message and what they're doing. It was really inspiring. And, it's just beautiful, beautiful things that we were able to be part of in Taiwan. And like I say, I think, you know, they're just going full steam ahead on every level in Taiwan. I hope, you know, if any country is going to, you know, lead the way into veganism, I think they're the ones. They're so far ahead of us. But still, I think, you know, like I said, we can learn. They have a very strong community, tremendous teamwork. It's the teamwork. It's just the way they work together. It's just really beautiful for me, anyway, to see that. It's just so natural, it seems like. It's not this sort of individualistic kind of mentality, which, you know, I know has its benefits, too, but it seemed like it was much easier for them to put on events and just work together and make it happen. And but anyway, so that was, and then we went to after a week in Taiwan, we spent a week in Vietnam and Singapore, and this was really different. I mean, going to Hanoi, my goodness, that was like stepping back into another time in a lot of ways. There weren't many cars, pretty much little motorcycles, like thousands of them. Oh, what a thing! I mean, in the morning, it was so funny. In the morning, we were staying in this hotel right in downtown Hanoi, and it's just absolutely full of there are cars too, but lots of these little motorcycles. And in fact, after we got there, we checked into our hotel. They met us at the airport. These nice people, the local vegan group, brought us to this hotel and said, and then we're going to go and give a lecture at a restaurant. And so we went outside to get in the car, and they said, it's too much traffic for the car. We're going to take you on motorbikes. So Madeline, she was like, what? You know? And so we had to jump on the back of this, you know, we jumped on the back of these motorbikes, and we just took off. And, I mean, you know, they're like zooming and weaving in and out, and just like, you know, they're probably 15 or 20 abreast, you know, just zooming down these roads. It's really, you can't imagine how chaotic it looks, but they're very skillful, and she was just hanging on for dear life, you know, and we got there okay, and we gave them the lecture. It was really nice, and they took us back, and we made it okay back, but you really have to hang on, I'm telling you, steam light, but then the next day, I remember I wanted to go and take a jog around this lake that was near this little lake with this little park, and it's completely encircled by roads, of course, it's right in the city, And so in order to cross this main road, there are just cars and motorcycles are just going, you know, and there's no light, there's no stop, there's just no way to get across, but people get across. So I got that far, I'd crossed other things, and I get that far, and I thought, okay, now what? How do I get to the lake? And I saw this woman coming the other way, and she was crossing over to where I was, and she just started walking out into the traffic. And that's what you do. You just walk into the traffic. And I did it. I learned to do it. It's actually amazing. I mean, you just start walking in, and the motorcycles all go around you, and you just keep walking. You just kind of nonchalantly just walk through the traffic. That's what everybody does. You just go, and you just trust that they're not going to hit you. And cars and motorcycles just weave around the people, and you just walk. You just got to keep walking, and sometimes you stop and for a minute and then go when you can. But it was really quite an experience in Vietnam to just see the absolute other way of living. I mean, just totally. I mean, China, there was parts like that, but it was somewhat more developed, it seemed like. But Vietnam, especially North Hanoi. So when we went to Saigon, or Ho Chi Minh City, as it's called now, and that was a lot more like a westernized, more developed city. And that didn't have quite that flair that Hanoi had. But
did you have good turnouts? And did you have good turnouts in Vietnam too?
Yeah, we had quite good turnouts. Yeah, they weren't quite as big as what we were used to, but we had, I would say, we had a good 150 maybe in Hanoi, and maybe 100 or so in Ho Chi Minh City. That was probably the least well organized. That was kind of. Now, Vietnam actually was a complete disaster. I mean, a few days before, it was a complete disaster. I had contacted this American people there with the Humane Society to set things up, and they just hadn't done anything. So I was able to get on the phone or actually talk to some people in Taiwan who had friends in Vietnam, and they just made it happen. It's amazing. They made it happen in a short notice. They just made it happen. Otherwise, it really would have been too bad. We would have hardly had anybody at all.
Just like Jade made it happen for you in China. It's just interesting
how things kind of fit
in and help you out if you're on the right path.
That's what it seemed like. Yeah. And then when we got to Singapore, that was much more westernized. That was really, now we felt like we're back. Like that was the very first time in all these many weeks that I actually heard, you know, those irritating blowers, and they, you know, instead of sweeping, they blow, you know, they have like the blowers, you know, in Vietnam, China, Taiwan, they would never, people are out there with brooms and they're sweeping. You know, it's so nice. Everywhere you go, people are sweeping, sweeping everywhere. And we get to Singapore and they're out there with those blowers. And I thought, oh, here we are back in reality again.
Did they demonstrate interest there as well?
It was very different. Yeah, Singapore is basically like being in the West, I would say, in many degrees. I spoke at the Vegetarian Society. They had some kind of a community club there, and I spoke there. And there's a mixture of Westerners, and there's a lot of Westerners, a lot of Americans and Canadians and Europeans living in Singapore, and then Chinese, of course, and then the local Indonesian. So it's a mix. It's such a mix, and it's just a huge city. You know, there's no land except the city, and but it was a great turnout. I mean, they had a good turnout. They had a good big, you know, at least 250 people. Nice piano, went great. And then we had a few days to really get to know. And I spoke again at this school. They have an international school. I spoke for the children, several different groups in the auditorium, and played piano. That went really well. They just let me.
Did you play it every lecture?
Yes. I played every single thing. They always had a piano. It was amazing. They brought one in. They would always bring one in, no matter what. They somehow got an instrument there. Yeah, and that was really good because I didn't need a translator. You know, I could just play and could connect through the universal magic, really, of the language of music. Mm. And then we came to Hawaii. We spent 3 weeks actually in Hawaii. We did two World Peace Diet Facilitator training, 3-day weekends, and then a bunch of other lectures too. So that went all in very well. But then, of course, at that point, we were more or less back in Western culture much more. But China, I have to say, they've invited us back. They would love us to come back twice in 2017. I don't think we can do that. We'll probably go back once. We're trying to figure out when. And Taiwan, I was just on the phone with him a few minutes ago before the call, and they're hoping we'll come for a whole month. They want us for a whole month. I think we can go for a whole month. But yeah, they're very – we met some amazing people doing amazing things in Taiwan also. I have to really say there's a vegan restaurant there where they're really interested in creating a whole vegan university, basically, like a put on a whole series of – have people come and just take courses in every aspect of vegan living. I mean, like cooking classes, classes on theory of not only vegan theory but also in meditation, in nonviolent communication and effective advocacy, you know, to really create a retreat center promoting vegan living and education. And in conjunction with, so people can become vegan coaches, restaurateurs, cooks, chefs, counselors, consultants, humane educators. You know, there's so much that can be done. I mean, it's all about education. And these people are already, I mean, they're already getting the idea. We don't have anything like that, as I know of, in this country, but it would be good, I think, to have something like that. But, the idea is to really have a holistic approach to education and do courses, you know, do courses where people can come and learn and then go back and bring it back to their communities. I think that
a college course based on the World Peace Diet is really, we could start with that. That's what's needed in
one. I know, that would be.
I really feel that way. Yeah. It's kind of the way I approach World Peace Diet Sunday. I approach it as if I were in a, you know, doing a teaching of this book in a classroom,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
in a college classroom, because after all, it was written by a teacher who taught college, you, and so I kind of try to model myself after that, and then, you know,
yeah,
give commentary
it's set up that
and
way.
Teach
it, really,
teaching
yeah.
the World
yeah.
Peace Diet. I wish
right.
it could be in every university, just a world, because it gives such a basic overview of why to be vegan, and then they can take it from there, and the how-to, you know, courses. But the World Peace Diet gives
right.
you an amazing overview on why to, because it uncovers every reason
right.
to be vegan. So I just wonder if we could get a movement of that going in this country.
It would be great. You know, I think, you know, it's been done in some colleges and universities. I don't always hear about it. I heard about one where it worked for a few semesters, and then a dean found out in the dairy industry just stopped it. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they stopped it. It was in Purdue. It's right in the middle of animal agriculture in Indiana. So they were just stopped. But I think it would be, you know, and when I think about it, you know, with 15 chapters, I mean, on the quarter system, I always had about 15 weeks. And so it, in a way, it is set up for a semester-long course you could go through. And, that's the lowdown on our most recent adventure to Asia, and it's been a little over an hour here. So I'm wondering, I can't stay too much longer, but I can stay a little longer. Lily, do you have any other questions or anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, we could open it up to anyone who something came up for someone.
I have a quick question. Thank you for sharing your experiences. They're really inspirational. This is Andrea here in Texas. You mentioned when you were in Taiwan that there was a person or an organization that was founded, I think this is what you said, Suchi, or was Suchi the name of the person who founded the other organization
yeah.
besides Clean Life Foundation? You mentioned one other.
Yeah, it's Tzu-Chi, that's spelled T-Z-U, is one word, and the other word is Chi, C-H-I, Tzu-Chi.
Okay.
And the woman who founded it, her name is Heng Yen, H-E-N-G, and then second word is Y-E-N, Bhikshuni or Master Heng Yen. She's kind of elderly now. She's very beautiful. She's a she's a nun, you know, shaved head in robes, and very gentle, but very incredibly committed. And she, the story, very, very briefly, is that she was a young nun, you know, back, whatever, 40 years ago, and living in a Buddhist monastery, and she just decided that she didn't want to have Buddhism be only something where you meditate. She wanted to help people. And so she started to just try to figure out ways to raise a little bit of money that she could then buy food to help people. And it just sort of one thing led to another, and people were inspired, and they said, yes, we want to contribute. And gradually she was able to, you know, started out with only like two or three people, and now there's 10 million. it's just amazing.
Fantastic.
To see. You can really read about it. I mean, just go to Tzu Chi, I guess, probably a Google ad, and you can find out more.
How is it spelled again, Will?
T is in Tom, Z is zebra, U, Tzu.
Uh-huh.
That's one word, and then Chi, C-H-I, the second word, Tzu Chi.
Thank you for that question, Andrea. Very good.
Yeah, I was actually, they were, I went to Taiwan a couple, I guess it was about 2 years ago, the only other time I was ever there, and I went into Tzu Chi. They invited me in to be on their television show. They have a whole channel. They have their own television channel in Taiwan, and they have, you know, they own a whole skyscraper themselves, and in Taipei. And so I went in, and they have a beautiful big grand piano, and I did two episodes of their, and that's a national television show. And they also have a hospital as well, and the hospital is all vegetarian. It's pretty much all vegan. So I gave a lecture in the hospital too, and so they're just doing fantastic work. I mean, they're spreading the vegan message so far and so wide, so deeply. It's really great to see what they're doing. This woman, you know, this frail little woman, how that power that one mind has to just galvanize millions of people to just bring love and peace and healing to the world. It's, you know, it really, it's amazing to see. I just love it to see how one person can just keep with perseverance can really bless so many people. But I do think it's important also to realize that many of the people that are having a huge impact also, you know, don't have a big movement too. You know, it's not to say you have to have a big movement to be somebody. I think the whole idea is just each one of us, we each have a part to play, and if we do our part, maybe we have a big movement, maybe we're just reaching people in other ways more quietly, but you can't ever say that one is more important than another. You know, they're all equally important. They're all equally beautiful and significant, and it's not a good idea to compare ourselves with other people. To just do what's in our heart to do, and I think that's what we're seeing happening in the vegan movement. It's really great to see.
I wanted to ask you about Ching Hai. Is she Vietnamese? Where is she, Master Ching Hai?
Yeah, Master Ching Hai is Vietnamese.
Did you see her on this trip, or does she live in Vietnam?
No,
she didn't mention her. So
I didn't mention her. She's not really a public figure. People
mm-hmm.
don't see her. Typically, she is seen by some of her close students, I think, but she has a very big movement. It's probably the most powerful, I think, along with Tzu Chi, those are probably the two biggest, I think, most effective vegan movements in the world in terms of actually, you know, reaching a lot of people. And Supreme Master Ching Hai has a very large movement in Taiwan also, and they have Loving Hut restaurants, and they were helping us also in Taiwan. Last time we were in Taiwan, we worked a little bit more with them. This time we were working with the Clean Life Foundation. So that's another group founded by a guy named Sat Dharma, who is a Taiwanese who went to India and studied yoga and went vegan and teaches meditation and yoga and veganism. And so there's quite a few groups that are doing this, but she is now, I think, living more in Europe, I believe. But her students are beautiful. I mean, they're wonderful people and very, very, very helpful and very, really helping the vegan movement a lot too, yeah.
Wonderful.
May I ask you what the name of the group is on WeChat, the Chinese group, the Asian group that you mentioned? You said there's about 3 or 4 of them.
Well, you know, I can't really tell you. I was never able... myself to ever get on WeChat. I just couldn't do it for some reason. I just couldn't get on WeChat. The system just wouldn't let me. And so my knowledge of WeChat is pretty much zero. I don't know any. I just know WeChat is huge in China, and they do everything by WeChat. They would sell the tickets to my lectures through WeChat. People would buy the books through WeChat, and then they would come and
it is
pick
huge
it up
there.
And, Yeah.
I have a friend who is Canadian, and he's teaching English in China now, and he's vegan, and he has been complaining that there's, like, really not a lot of vegan things there, and this is mind-blowing for me, and I'm trying to get information to share with him so he can connect in with this vegan movement and these different incredible things that you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Which city is he in? Do you have any idea? I'm not sure if that would help.
I don't know.
I think, I don't know how fluent he is in Chinese. That's another thing, too, of course. These are pretty much all Chinese. I mean, in Beijing, I did give one lecture. I gave a lecture at the vegan restaurant. They had maybe 20 people came over for dinner, and we had dinner together, or lunch. I guess it was lunch, and I talked to them. And he's in Beijing. Well, they have an expat vegan meetup group there. I could give you the name of the woman who's the organizer of that because
That's great. So much.
This is a very nice group. This is a woman I met originally, actually, in New Zealand, and there's. Just look it up here quickly. Yeah, her name is, Alisa. Her name is Alisa.
Like Aretha Franklin?
Alisa, I don't know her last name, A-L-I-S-A, Alisa. And do you want me to give you her email address? I can just give it to you.
Yes, please.
It's at gmail.com, and it's A as in Apple, and then R as in Robert, and then Fortune, F-O-R-T-U-N, so A-R-F-U-R-T-U-N, A-R-F-U-R-T-U-N, and then A-T-I. So I'm not sure, you know, that's what it is. It's A-R-F-O-R-T-U-N-A-T-I at gmail.com.
Wait, T-U-N, not T-U-N-E?
Yeah, well, it would sound like R-Fortunati, A-R-F-U-R-T-U-N-A-T-I. O-R-T-U-N-A-T-I, Fortunati at gmail.com. Her name is Alisa, and she's the organizer. Her partner's name is Mike, and they have a whole vegan thing going in Beijing.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
All right. Sure.
Hello, Will.
Hello. Is this Michael?
Yes, hi. Hi, Lily. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Michael.
I just had a quick question for you. Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone where you went to, everyone for spreading the vegan message because it's so important. In your translated books in Chinese, what did they use in place of vegan? Did they use the World Peace Diet or like when they, for example, when you were talking about Donald Watson and the vegan definition, what did they use for the word vegan?
That's a good question. The translation was done by a guy that I actually get to travel with. I went to the Great Wall with him. Really wonderful, wonderful young man. Very smart, very spiritual. And he, I think he used a few different, depending on the context, explained what veganism is. And I think he probably. I'm not totally sure. You know, it's strict vegetarian. I think they use that. That's the standard to use is strict vegetarian. People kind of know that in the know, they know that means vegan. But they also are starting to use now the word, you know, just they can somehow get the sound vegan. You know, that's a problem because it's a language that doesn't use an alphabet. It uses ideograms. And so to create an ideogram for vegan is not an easy task. And so I think he was telling me that he was using that ideogram for vegan also that people are starting to use as well. So, but that's a good question. I think I should send him. I never actually found out what.
Sorry, do you have his name? Do you have his name?
Yeah. It's I can look it up. Let's see.
Sure. Thank you.
Terence. I mean, the thing is, their names are completely Chinese names, and they always just pick an English name, you know, to call themselves. It's so funny. So he picked the name Terence. His email is Terence, TerenceHun, at Gmail.
Thank you.
And he lives in Macau and Beijing. I think he goes between the two. But he's a wonderful guy, very, very, very nice, and brilliant. I think he's a brilliant translator. I think he did a really good job. Everybody said it was an amazing translation job he did. So, yeah, I'm very, really happy with him.
Hey, thank you, Will, for doing all that in Asia.
Yeah.
Will, you didn't tell us about any of your harrowing experiences that you had.
Well, I mentioned a few of them in Hanoi. That was
when you had to sleep. I think you said you had to sleep on a table in a restaurant, and a few other things that happened.
Right.
Of course, the motorcycle ride was something that I'm glad you didn't tell me about.
that
you did have some real heavy-duty experiences there, and the air quality at times was not so great, right?
Oh, it was unbelievable. That was very difficult for me. Yeah, there was just no, I just never saw any ever for day after day after day. I never saw the sun. It was just gray clouds, milky, soupy, smelly air in every single city. So one city after the next was always the same. And finally at we got right after Chengdu, we went out to that Buddhist temple I was mentioning, and I actually got some sunlight. It was the only time in China I had some sunlight.
Was it clouds? Was it fumes though? Was it like smog and smog clouds?
It was smog, mainly smog most of the of the time. It was only at the there was a little bit of bright sun there at that temple in Kunming, I mentioned, and then it was back into the smog and fog. And then when we got to Hong Kong is different. Hong Kong would have had clear skies, and Xiamen also, but it was just rainy. So
mm-hmm.
we didn't get
so would you say the smog is worse than on a bad day in L.A.?
I would say probably it is worse there in the major cities. I talked to the people in Beijing, and they said when they first moved there about 7 years ago, it was a lot worse, and they'd been working to improve it. And they have some scale that they use, and they said they had days that were up around 600 or 700 on the scale, which is really terrible. Now, in the early days when they first got there 7 or 8 years ago, but now it's usually around 200, 250, which isn't good, but it's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still a real problem. I would say it's a definite problem. It's really too bad that there is that problem there. I wish they could do something about it. But, yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, we were, the lecture schedule was grueling. I mean, it was, we were sleeping on the plane. It was so neat though. We never had one flight no flights were delayed. We had no problems. And in fact, on quite a few flights, I learned this trick from Dr. Yu Li. We would get in our seat, and then when the plane got ready to take off, or even right before it took off, we would go to the back of the plane, and very often they would have a row or two back there with nobody in it. So we would go claim it and sleep. And I would catch a little shut eye because we really didn't have time a lot of times. So we'd have to.
And you said, you said something about the food too. It was kind of, you had vegan food, but
that's true. They don't really have, they really use MSG.
They use a lot of MSG,
Yeah, even in vegan restaurants. And Dr. Yu was trying to educate people, but he said pretty much every restaurant we went into, they had MSG, and he would call them out on it. Yeah, I know.
Wow. Well, it's amazing, Will, that you made it through. I was on tender hooks the whole time you were gone. I was like, Jim, let's pray for Will. Let's give him an extra prayer now. Because, you know, with
really
all
helped.
Those flights.
Yeah. I'm sure it
now,
helped a lot. I mean,
I think it might have.
A lot of miracles. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. And I'm glad Jade came and, you know, took over. Is she going to maybe help you on your next tour of China?
I think
so.
Yeah, Dr. Yu, and they're doing an event together in February, and I think she's really great. Yeah.
No, that's so wonderful. It's amazing how much one person can do and makes all the difference, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm, so amazing. And did anyone else want to add any kind of a question to Will before? I did have one question for you, Will, personally.
Okay, yeah.
Do you take a lot of supplementation? Do you do supplements? You know, like you were on a grueling schedule. So, but did you do extra supplementation, or do you do any supplementation in terms of vitamin usage?
Right.
Do you do that? Do you do a lot of that? Now, you've been vegan also like almost 40 years, right?
Right, right. Yeah, so in China that whole time, that was part of the thing. I don't actually do supplementation much anyway. Maybe the only thing I take really, we both do, is a little B12. We have this little thing on the counter, and I squirt one under my tongue every few days. But that's it. That's all we do. Sometimes, let me see what else. If there's anything else. Well, we like flax seeds. We always grind some of those up and put them in our green smoothie.
But you don't do a lot of vitamin, different vitamins and things.
No,
because
I don't believe in taking vitamins. There's
this attitude, oh, you're vegan, so you're not getting the nutrients, but I think you're getting more nutrients as a vegan than you would in the regular.
When I was in China, you know, the cuisine was so completely foreign to me, really. I mean, I've traveled all over the world a lot. I lived in Korea as a Zen monk. We've been in Korea, Taiwan. But, gosh, I'm telling you, going around China, every single meal, I was eating so many foods constantly that I had never seen in my life and never heard of in my life. I mean, especially funguses, all kinds of fungus and mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
That's what they basically serve. I mean, it was wonderful. They put out a big lazy, they have this big rotating disc like a Lazy Susan, and they put all these beautiful dishes on there, but they were very exotic. They were things that I, for the most part, had never had. And they had these strange names like calves liver fungus and snake fungus and all this stuff. I would eat it, and it was actually, for the most part, it was pretty good. There was, some of it definitely took some getting used to, but I never got sick. I was totally healthy the whole time and felt great, and, you know, was eating a lot
that your Dr. Yu was concerned that they were overdoing it, right? How old is Dr. Yu about, would you say?
He's a very, in really good shape. I'd say he's probably 40, maybe. I'm almost 25 years older than him, or 20. He's probably in his early 40s. But he was a ping pong. I found he was a ping pong champion. He was like
They love ping pong. He was concerned. Yeah. He kept saying, "Are you okay? Are you okay?"
I know.
Because you're very deferential, because you're actually probably old enough to be his parent, right? They have their children young, and so they are you okay? Are you good to go, Dr. Tuttle? Are you?
they don't
realize who they're dealing with, right?
Right.
A person who's been a vegan 40 years and what you do. And you, how many weeks did you give yourself off between the time you did your 11-month American tour and the time? This is really important, because I hear from people, I went vegan, but I didn't feel so good, so I'm not vegan anymore, you know, blah, blah, blah. So
no,
how many weeks did you give yourself off between the American tour, which ended in December, right?
So the American tour ended in October.
October.
We had 2.5 weeks. We left on election day. In fact, I found out that Trump won when I was in the airport in Beijing.
Okay.
It was so interesting.
Uh-huh.
I was in Beijing, and somebody said, "Who won the election?" Or not? Donald Trump won. Yeah. So that was November. We flew in November 8th on the election day. But we got back around mid to late October, whatever it was. And no, I just think,
and then how many
so much
how much time did you have before you started to take your Asian tour? How much time did you work kind of?
We had 2.5 weeks, and then we
2.5 weeks, and then you were off again on this grueling Asian tour. But so that I'm making a point. If there's anybody on the line wondering if, oh, am I going to get enough nutrition as a vegan? Am I going to have enough energy? And if, oh, I didn't feel so good, or I'm, you know, whatever it is. Listen to that.
Right.
Listen to Dr. Will Tuttle and Madeline. I mean, these people are in their 60s. And, you know, they're doing great. You know, they're able to do things that probably someone in their 40s would consider kind of amazing.
I think so. I mean,
yes, that's why the doctor kept talking to you. He kept asking you, are you okay to do this? You know, because he was going by the age, but not by who you are and what the way you've lived your life.
Yeah, I definitely had to kind of rise to the occasion because, you know, I would be giving, you know, a lecture and then being on a panel and then signing books, and I'd be the only one who has to sign books, and everybody else could just hang out. I was signing, I was interacting with hundreds and hundreds of people day after day after day, night after night, getting back at midnight, getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning and flying again to the next place. And getting up and, you know, and I really take time every day for an hour to meditate. But sometimes I had to just do that. You know, I had to get up early enough to do that, or I'd have to do it maybe part of it while I'm in the plane. And then doing exercises. I really like to, you know, to do some running and do some push-ups and all that stuff. So I was, you know, having to fit all that
in. You kept yourself fit during.
Yeah, I just made sure I kept doing all those things, you know, to keep the energy flowing and doing some Tai Chi and yoga, everything. And then it just worked, you know, it worked really well. Now it's kind of neat. The other thing we've kind of discovered, I think, is a nice tip for people if you're interested is, you know, Madeline has started doing occasionally a juice fast or a juice cleanse or something like that where we bought, I'd say in September, I guess it was, in September we bought a juicer. We never had a juicer. So we bought a juicer and she did a 10 or maybe an 8-day juice. So she was juicing, you know, carrots and celery and apples primarily and ginger, I guess, and some greens. And she did that for 8 days, just drank juice. She would give me a little bit and it's really great, you know, have a glass of juice. And so now she's doing another juice fast, probably a 10-day one. She wants to do one. And, so that's the other thing I get. It's not really a supplement, but, besides my morning, I have a green smoothie in the morning and then a salad, kind of tortillas for lunch and then usually some veggies and starch for supper. But now in the afternoon, I get a juice. And I have to tell you, I feel like I have so much energy lately with getting this juice on top of everything else. It's a fresh, like,
carrot and celery. Carrot and celery, maybe some spinach and greens and that kind of thing,
too? Yeah, something like that. Just a few
well, that's what and, your, what was his name, the guy that you used to do Vegan Palooza with?
He's into juicing, right?
He actually wrote a book on it, so it really is good, isn't it? It really is good.
I think we can try it out, but it's a nice way now and then, I think, to get a burst of just lots of vitamins and minerals, just kind of, and they're delicious too. It's really delicious.
Oh yeah. Well, when we start up World Peace Diet Sunday again on April 23rd, maybe Madeline would, if you're in town, maybe she could come on and talk to us about her juicing adventure.
I would love to have her on.
And, we could kick off another World Peace Diet Sunday. And the only reason I don't do it in like 3-month increments is that I read the whole book. So the whole book gets read and you cannot do that. It takes close to a year to do that.
Right.
And, because you can't read it in 3 months. You can't read it aloud in 3 months. It just, in 1 hour, can't do it. Doesn't work. And plus I open it up for discussion. So. But I was thinking, a college course could be, I mean, I think the book should be read and read and reread and reread. I get more out of it every time. This is my 8th time I'm going into now.
I just want to say one thing, if I may. This is Andrea here in Texas. One of the things that Lily has managed to do is create a community in the discussions that happened during the World Peace Diet and then the salon that follows, and I think a testimony to the community that has been co-created amongst all of us, including all of us, is two of long-term participants are leading a discussion group addressing intersectionality, also known as the boomerang effect, I mentioned and discussed from your book, Will. And
wonderful.
This will be beginning next week at the same time during the interim from the conclusion of reading the book last week, and beginning again coming on the 23rd of April. So
I really appreciate you
really
saying
beautiful.
That because I had meant to mention that, yes, the lines, we don't know how long they'll be open for that, but depending on participation and what people want to do, while I'm on hiatus, Joanna Blad and Marlene will be doing that. So thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that, Andrea. And I hope you'll be there. I'll be there whenever I can. I'll just jump on too and listen in and be there to support that. But it will just keep the line kind of open, and also it'll be interesting to see where it goes with that.
Yeah.
We will not be reading the World Peace Diet during that time.
Right. But I think that's
Marlene Nero and Joanna Blatt will kind of handle that. They asked if they could do that, and I said, well, my goodness, yes, please. keep the word going. I mean, I never stop talking about it. So
that's
thank
fantastic.
You. Thank you for mentioning that.
Right.
Okay. So,
great, yeah, we should probably should go. It's been so great. I want to thank everyone for listening and thank
it,
you.
Was there?
Too.
I just have this intuitive feeling there may be one more brief question out in the ether. There is there anybody there who did not get a chance to ask something, and we're just gonna let you know not. Otherwise, maybe I'm wrong. Is there somebody?
I had a question.
And who is this?
Is Mary. This is Mary in Kansas.
Thank you, Mary.
In Kansas, where Judy Carman and Michael are.
Uh-huh.
And my question is not so much for Will. I just would like to know if there will be available later either an archived replay or if there will be a recording available in some other format of Will's presentation.
Of this,
tonight.
Yes, absolutely there will be. And, again, thank you, Mary. That's what I count on people to just keep me on track here. Let me just tell you how to do that. You will be able to call. You'd be able to call a number for a while, and you can get it right on the telephone, and you can use the same access code. The same access code, the same number, except that rather than 3900, it's 712-432-3900, it's 3903. And that will be available. You could dial that up, and it will be available today, I believe. You'll be able to do that. Now, I've taped it. And also, tonight, I don't believe we have Sharon Abar on the line. She is my trusty, marvelous media person, web mistress. And what she does is she'll link you to the talks, actually all the talks. She'll be able to do that for you, Mary.
You mean even beyond that temporary period when it can be
Yes. Are you on our email list?
Well, I've been on Facebook with Sharon since I joined Facebook, but I have not been participating in the Sunday study groups. But if I message Sharon, she'll be able.
She
to
will give you a link. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Do you know how to get in touch with Sharon?
Well, we're Facebook friends.
Okay, good. If you're Facebook friends, there you go. Voila.
Yeah.
And just contact her. She's very good about that.
And I just want to thank Will so much for that fascinating and affirming presentation tonight. Will, I've met you only a couple times here in Wichita through Diane Waltner, your friend.
Great. Yes.
Yes, and we hosted you here in Wichita a couple times.
Right.
And, of course, we connect with Judy, too, in Lawrence.
Wonderful.
But anyway, I only wanted to say thank you so much. I really am glad I called in.
Great, Mary.
Well,
we're glad
you called in, and please come back, because I think this talks that are going to be given on the boomerang effect, not only talks but discussion on that, are going to be interesting. And then on April 23rd, I start up with a fourth session of World Peace Diet Sunday. So, okay.
Yeah, the intersectionality sounds wonderful. I'll try to connect into that. But anyway, I know Will probably needs to go. I just wanted to say thank you so much. It was so worthwhile hearing your tale of your adventure.
All right. Thanks, Mary. Great. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone.
I have one question.
Okay.
One big question. Again, and yes, thank you so much for the kind presentation tonight and your wonderful dedication.
And this is Eric Wiseman, the founder of Evolution Pet Foods.
Yes, hi, Erica.
My Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow, Princess Madeline Tuttle, is growing in leaps and bounds and is 8 weeks old now. And that's the pet food she's been raised on now, and all my other animals. This is a marvelous evolution. Evolution is the one, not any other one. Evolution pet food.
Thanks, Lily. Thanks for the affirmation. Will, didn't it feel great to be embraced, even if it wasn't as huge a success as you imagined, to be embraced by a government agency instead of being dissed like you are in the United States by the U.S. government? That must have been amazing.
Oh, it's you're right. It's like it was so refreshing. You know, it really had this feeling that, you know, the government's in support of the vegan movement, and it's also true in Taiwan as well. So both of those are is really the sense of working together with the people who are making decisions and not against, you know, having to fight them all the time. Like in this country, it's ridiculous. It's so corrupt, and it's so completely, you know, in bed. It's this revolving door. It's terrible. But yeah, no, that was palpable for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you must have felt an air of safety. I mean, going from here to there. I mean, here, the industry, the slaughter industry and the chemical drug industry
are
totally against veganism. Totally against me, and the weapons industry, of course. So, you know, you go to another country like China, which, and this, the corporate media here is always dissing China, you know, on the internet and the corporate news and, you know, and the magazines are always dissing China and Asia and telling people here how controlled living is there, and how, it's like almost like a Nazi dictatorship. That's what they're inferring here, and nothing could be further
further
from the truth, the fact.
That's true. I felt that. I felt the when I was I was really curious about that. You know, just going through China, walking through the cities, walking through the airports, looking at the people, going around. People are happy, basically. I mean, you know, not everybody isn't jumping up and down, but they're basically, you know, they're living their lives. They seem happy, friendly, laughing, for the most part. You know, they're very little crime. I felt safe everywhere. I mean, it's just not, you don't have to worry. You know, I remember like when we missed the train going out of Beijing, and so we were going to. The taxi guy kind of got lost, and so we missed the train. So it was midnight. I was standing there, you know, in this cavernous train station in Beijing. It's probably the biggest train station in the world. And then we were out on the sidewalk, and then we had to, you know, take a taxi and go back to his restaurant. That's what Lily was referring to. We had to sleep on the benches of his restaurant until getting up at 4 to go to catch a plane. But he left the door wide open, you know, in the middle of the city, you know, and people could come and go if they wanted to. We had, you know, there's just this feeling of, it's like you don't have to worry about anything, really. It's
That's wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you know, Eric is really constantly up against it because he's, you know, for 28 years now, he's been he's right. been with his vegan pet food, and, you know, he knows. He's always up again. But you sell to China, don't you, Eric? You have people, customers in China. Yeah.
We have customers in Asia and Japan.
Wow.
And they buy our pet food made in the USA, our vegan pet food. But, you know, it's a really, excuse me, it's a constant battle here. Because, you know, they'd like nothing better. When I say they, the government, lackeys,
absolutely.
You know, that work for the slaughter industry, the chemical drug industry, they'd like nothing better than to see us go under.
Right.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Right. Yeah, like, I know.
Well, you're not going under as far as I'm concerned, but I know Will needs to go. I talk about your product
right.
every single day, Eric, you know, to everybody,
right.
too.
That's
yeah, I talk about
yeah.
the World
really
Peace Diet and Evolution Diet, those two
yeah.
things.
Yeah,
because
I
don't.
Quite a bit, too.
I absolutely. I don't want to keep you any longer, Will, because you've
Great.
Been
well,
more
thank
than,
you.
More
yeah,
than generous.
Thanks, Eric, and thanks so much, Lee. Thank you, everyone.
Thank
you
so much. Give our love,
yeah.
give much
Thank
love
so
to Madeline.
Much.
Yes, definitely.
Much,
I will. All
much
right.
Love
Take
to
Thank you, Will. Thank you, everyone.
Everyone.
Thank you, Madeline.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
right.
you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Much okay. love. Much love. I hold you in my heart.